Elijah is one of God's greatest prophets. Of that there is no doubt. But we could spend a lot of time in the introduction of this message extolling the life and ministry of this very brave and courageous man of God. In fact, so great was his life that not only did the Lord send the chariot of heaven to come and take him to heaven without going through the graveyard, but it is said that the Lord Jesus came to earth in the spirit of Elijah. Elijah is one of the truly remarkable, courageous, gifted men of God in all of the Bible. If we were to read the story in 1 Kings chapter 18, we would read how Elijah withstood just 450 false prophets, as some will say as they read this passage, because they don't read it carefully. If you read the chapter carefully, you will find that it was actually 850 false prophets that appeared on Mount Carmel, that appeared in a contest against one man, Elijah. At stake was the future of Israel. It is hard to imagine that sometimes in the sovereignty of God, the future of a country could come down to the actions and the courage of one man. We think about how weak and frail we are. We often look ourselves in the mirror and we ask ourselves, what can I do? Especially as we look at the condition of our country today. And everywhere I go, I hear people ask me the question, and every day my email has an email from someone asking the question, Chuck, what can I do? It seems hopeless. It seems as if there is no solution. Well, let me tell you this emphatically. If you are looking to Washington, D.C. for a solution, you will never find a solution. Never. And it seems today that what we have become, in fact, many of us that call ourselves Christians are no better than those that make no profession of Christ. We have come to look to the federal government to meet our every needs and to bail us out of any problem that we may have. And whether we are conservatives or liberals or Republicans or Democrats, it doesn't seem to matter. Everyone seems to worship toward that putrid province on the Potomac. Amen. We all seem to look to D.C. as the great supplier, the great benefactor for all of our needs, whatever they may be. And yet, the more powerful Washington becomes, the greater the central government becomes, the more pervasive its influence, its edicts, etc., the fewer freedoms we seem to have, and the less prosperity we seem to have, and our country continues its tailspin into moral, spiritual, and ethical depravity. But the problem is not that there is no solution. It's just that we are looking to the wrong place for that solution. In Israel, Ahab and Jezebel were on the throne. Ahab was a wicked, wicked king. And as wicked and evil as Ahab was, Jezebel was even wickeder. It's not good English, but it's true. She was a ruthless, heartless, conscienceless, cold-hearted woman, vindictive, murderous. And this pair, Ahab and Jezebel, reigned as a tyrant over the people of God in Israel. And God had raised up a man at that moment of time to do spiritual battle with Ahab and Jezebel. And his name was Elijah. You know, I want to say this right now. Throughout our history, we have had many evil presidents. We have had many evil congressmen, evil senators, evil Supreme Court justices, evil leaders and rulers, men or women who have set themselves against the principles of truth and the principles of law and the principles of right and have tried to force their will upon the country. This has happened repeatedly at various stages of our history and any country's history. In America, traditionally, however, one of the things that we've always enjoyed, one of the great benefits to this great republic, has always been the fact that historically, whenever these kind of men would try to bring this kind of oppression upon the people, there has always been a group of courageous, bold prophets of God who would stand in the pulpits, point the finger at the king, and say, "Thus saith the Lord." The problem in America today is that we don't have those prophets anymore. For the most part, the men of God are not pointing the finger at the king. They instead are holding their hand out to the king. But Elijah was the prophet of God who would not bow. He was the prophet of God who was determined he would resist the tyrannical reign of Ahab and Jezebel. And it came down to a monstrous showdown on Mount Carmel, and you read about it in 1 Kings chapter 18. And just for sake of time, here they were, 850 false prophets of Baal, paid hirelings of King Ahab and Queen Jezebel. Don't mistake that. These men were not God-called, God-equipped, God-sustained preachers. They were paid servants of the king. You know, every civil authority wants to have a facade of religious acceptance. I don't care where you go. Every civil leader wants to present himself as being acceptable to the, quote, religious community. And so often they will hire around them clergymen, men of the cloth, prophets in this case, that will speak for them, that will do their bidding under the guise and the rubric of religion. So that the king can say, "Look, I'm a Christian. I believe in God. Well, if you don't believe me, ask Reverend so-and-so." "Oh, yes. I know he's a Christian. He reads his Bible. He prays. He's a good man." "Oh, isn't it wonderful to have a Christian in office?" 850 paid preachers from Ahab on Mount Carmel. One prophet of God. Now, I don't know about you. If you are an odds maker, how many of you are going to put your money on Elijah? You know, and that's another thing that I got to mention here. This is why we Christians have got to get over this pragmatism philosophy, well, we've got to do this or that because it's the practical thing to do. And after all, you can't win if you don't do this. We've got to get out of that mindset. We're not winning because we are not doing what Elijah did. That's why we're not winning. Now, how many of you think that if Elijah would have gone up there to that mountain and said, you know, boys, I think we can come to a compromise. You know, I mean, really, we're not that far apart. You know, you believe in a deity. Yeah, you know, he's an idol made by hands. And I worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the Bible, the God of heaven and earth, King of kings and Lord of lords. But surely we can find common ground somewhere. And besides, if I do this, if I oppose you fellas, I'm going to break the law. And Romans 13 says I'm supposed to obey the law. And so I can't do that. I mean, come on, guys. We can come to a diplomatic relationship here. Can't we? How many of you think that if Elijah had gone to Mount Carmel with that spirit and that attitude, that we would have any of the victory that we read about? Fire falling down from heaven, consuming the sacrifice in the presence of the people. How many of you think the fire would have fell if Elijah had compromised the truth? The fire fell from heaven because Elijah would not compromise with evil. He stood on principle. He stood on what was right. And when the people of God in America start doing that again today, God will rain fire down on America for His honor and glory. And then they were so weakened because, you know, they, during the process, they were praying to Baal to bring down fire to, you know, consume the sacrifice. And there was no fire. And so the false prophets, they took these knives and they began to cut themselves to try and convince Baal to bring down the fire. You know, paid hirelings are not always the smartest people in the world. Now that's one thing we have going for us. You know, a lot of those people over there are not the sharpest knife in the drawer. They're really not. You know, the light is on, but there's nobody home. Here they are. They're trying to get this God to bring down fire. And so what do? They take out these knives and they start cutting themselves just all over their bodies. Well, what happens when you cut yourself? Duh. You bleed. What happens when you start losing enough blood? Your blood pressure drops and you drop. They get weak. And here they were, 850 of them, and they were cutting themselves and wailing and trying to get God to bring down the fire. It never happened. Of course, Elijah, he laughed at them. And then, of course, he said, I'll tell you what, let's do. Let's put water all over the sacrifice just to make sure that nobody's cheating here. And he just doused it all with water. Then he gave a real simple prayer, if I'm your servant, consume the sacrifice. And in about 30 seconds, the fire came and consumed the sacrifice. And then with all these prophets filled with blood laying on the ground, couldn't hardly stand up, Elijah finished the job and went over and killed them all. Took care of business. And that brings us to our text in chapter 19, verse 1. And Ahab told Jezebel. The prophets are dead. Elijah called down fire from heaven. And all of our paid hireling dupes are gone. Oh, Jezebel,
baptism
and said, I don't know about you, bud, but I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill Elijah. That's what I'm going to do. Don't just sit there and snivel, you weird little man. The family knows where that came from. Give me a sword. Let's go find him and let's kill him. So, Jezebel sends a messenger to Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me. And more also, in other words, what you did to those prophets, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time, you've got 24 hours to live. I'm going to kill you, Elijah. When he saw that, he arose and fled for his life. Now, you know, look, I have the same fears that everybody else has. I'm no Superman or anything like that. But I have a problem here. And I'm really not, I'm trying to be very respectful to Elijah because of who he was and what he did. But when I get to heaven, I want to ask Elijah about this. I just don't know. It seems to me that if I had just came down from a mountain where I prayed a prayer and fire came down from heaven and consumed a sacrifice and God gave me the power to destroy 850 false prophets of Baal, I am not going to turn tail and run from one woman. But there again, some women are really that frightening. Are they not? And God help you if you're married to her. He got scared. He ran for his life. And he goes to Beersheba. And he went a day's journey to the wilderness, sat down under a juniper tree, and then you get the verse about, please take my life. It's all over and done. I'm no good to anybody. I haven't done anything. And I don't know what to do. Oh God, just let me die. Look, you guys that are watching out there in Denver, you're in your late 20s. You have the mind, the heart, the courage. I'm reminded of that verse in Esther where Mordecai says to the queen, who knows that thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? And God used one person, Queen Esther, to save the people of Israel. The future of the nation came down to one person. Here in the history of Israel, the future of the people came down to one person. Jason, you, Micah, who knows that one day the fate of the country will come down to you. You may be the one man or the one group of men that will literally save this republic. It could come down to one of us in this room. It could come down to someone that we never thought of or we never knew about. But someone who was willing to stand in the face of all adversity, in the face of fear and intimidation, and yes, in the face of governmental edict. And to claim the power and the authority of God and to stand in the gap and watch God save a nation. It might come down to that. It might come down to one person. And I am telling you, everywhere, just like I'm mentioning these two young men in Denver this morning, everywhere I've gone, I've seen young people, young men, young women that are out there on the front line, and they're not worried about pragmatism, and they're not worried about practicality, and they don't care whether they're politically correct or not, and they don't care whether everybody likes them or not, and they're not enamored with money and wealth and pleasure. They want to secure liberty for their children. The rocks are crying out. The preachers are silent. And the rocks are crying out. Elijah, here he is, the man of God, the most courageous man of his day. And now he's hiding under a juniper tree, feeling sorry for himself and requesting that God would kill him. Three times God comes to him. Why are you here, Elijah? What are you doing here, Elijah? And three times Elijah said, I'm jealous for the Lord of God of the host. The children of Israel forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altar, slain the prophets with the sword, and I'm the only one left, and they seek my life to take it away. Lord, if I die, truth is gone. If I die, it's all over. There's no one else. I got to survive. It is true that God chose Elijah for a very prominent and powerful role in Israel's history. It is true that God used Elijah to literally change the course of a nation. It's true. But it's not true that he was the only one left. That was not true. And after all of the events that you read about, the earthquake and the fire and the still small voice, God tenderly dealing with his discouraged prophet. I'm so glad God is tender with me sometimes when I get discouraged. I'm glad he doesn't do what he's justified to do. And just pick me up and shake me. What do you mean being discouraged? How dare you? You serve the God of heaven. Look what I have done for you. God could have said that. Elijah, were you back there on Mount Carmel just a few days ago? Do you remember what I did for you there? He didn't even bring it up. If I was God, I'd have brought it up. Wouldn't you? If I was God, I'd have said, why, you ingrate? What did I do for you on Mount Carmel? What do you mean you're discouraged? Like General Patton. He didn't. Very tender with his prophet. He brings to him the wind and the earthquake and the fire. And then at the end of it, he speaks to him in a real soft voice. Elijah, what are you doing here? You're my man. You go and stand before Ahab. And you don't worry about Jezebel. I got a plan for her like you're not going to believe. They're going to throw her off of a wall, break every bone in her body, and the dogs are going to lick the blood off of her body on the street. Don't worry about her. You're my man. Go stay. And oh, Elijah, just to let you know, there are yet 7,000 prophets in Elijah that have not bowed the knee to Baal. You're not alone. We're a nation of over 300 million people. When you look at the length and breadth, the size and scope of our country, the vastness of it, the sheer largeness of our population and of our territory, and you look around for the remnant, because you know God always has a remnant, and you don't see them very easily. And as you're in the battle, and as the enemy comes against you with all of his fury and all of his force, and you enter into that period of depression and discouragement, thinking that all is lost and I can do no more and I have no help and no support and I'm all by myself, and there is no hope. Crossroad Church and my dear friends across America, my patriot brothers and sisters who are watching right now, I want to tell all of you, God still has His remnant who have not and who will never bow the knee to Baal. We are here and they are there. And when you're discouraged, allow God's tender voice to come into your heart. Allow that sweet, small voice of the Spirit of God reassure your heart, saying to you, "You are my man. You are my woman. I have chosen you. Don't be afraid of her. Don't be afraid of him. Don't be afraid of them. I am with you. What I have done in the past, I will continue to do in the future. In fact, Elijah, I want you to go anoint a new king. And I want you to go anoint a new prophet. His name is Elisha. And Elijah, you may not know this, but for every miracle that you have done, Elisha is going to do two. He's going to do two. He's going to do twice what you have done. I am filled today with such optimism, not because of anything I see circumstantially. I think we're headed for serious, serious economic difficulties ahead. Much more than we've experienced heretofore. I think politically the climate is worse than it's ever been in our nation's history. Ever. I think we could be seeing the beginning of some serious divine judgment upon America. No. I'm not optimistic because of anything that I see going on in Washington or New York or Wall Street or in the news media. No, I'm not encouraged by any of that. If I dwell on that, I'll be discouraged again. I see it. I recognize it. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm optimistic today. I'm encouraged today because God has shown me. I can't tell you that trip to Denver did something for me. I saw something more clearly than I've seen in a long time. God showed me what He told Elijah. I have yet 7,000 who have not bowed the knee to Baal. He's shown me that there is a remnant in this country that is alive and well and growing and standing by. Standing by. And they are just waiting for God to give them the green light as to what to do. And they are ready to do it. And they're not going to be pragmatic about it. And they're not going to be practical about it. They're going to follow what God tells them to do with all of their heart, mind, soul, and strength. And I believe that God has brought them to the country for such a time as this. And I believe with all my heart, God is going to restore a land of freedom for the remnant in America again.